From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The new director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Rochelle Walensky, ordered a review of her agency's adherence to scientific principles during the Trump years. The review identified several problematic and politically motivated recommendations that were not based on science. As the CDC attempts to rebuild its tattered reputation in the post-Trump era, new guidelines on school reopening is expected based on research showing that 3 feet of social distancing may be just as good as 6. In the meantime, a massive vaccine rollout continues to be hampered by confusing tiers, complex online navigation, and inequity in distribution. To top it off, there's widespread vaccine skepticism, and Republican-run states are reopening prematurely, posing ever greater challenges to attaining herd immunity. As Europe struggles with a third surge in infections, can the U.S., with its massive supply of vaccines 1 year into the pandemic, avoid the same fate? My guest is Lawrence O. Gostin, a university professor at Georgetown University, where he directs the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law. He's also director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center on National and Global Health Law, where he's served in numerous high-level capacities. He's been one of our go-to guests since the start of the pandemic. Welcome back, Professor Gostin.
Thanks for having me, Sonali. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's first talk about the CDC. This is an organization that before the Trump years had a global reputation, a sterling reputation for being on the front lines of quickly being able to respond to public health crises. Then, of course, we know what happened during the Trump years. What do you make of this review and the ability of the new CDC director to kind of rescue the CDC from its tarnished reputation?
Well, you know, I'm really glad that Dr. Walensky ordered the review. I'd actually been pushing for the review in my writing and also in my direct dealings with high-level CDC staff. It was needed so that we could clear the air and really have an inquiry into what happened during the Trump years. Nothing that the review found was a surprise. We all knew that CDC was censored by the Trump administration. It literally couldn't change a word on its website without the White House's approval. Its guidelines were interfered with. And you're right, Sonali, it did tarnish the reputation of CDC. And that's really unfortunate because for me, it's the shining star of the federal agencies.
One of the recommendations, and by the way, the problematic ones have all been removed from the website, but one of them was an argument about school reopenings that downplayed the health risk. And we remember last year, you know, before there was enough information about how the virus spread and when it was very frightening and clear that the infections were rising, the CDC was clearly bending to the Trump administration and Betsy DeVos's desire to reopen schools at all costs or not even to shut them down. So what is the consensus now? There was a study published by some researchers that said they found no increase in infection rates if social distancing was 3 feet between students versus 6 feet.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of good evidence out there that schools need to be back in session and they should have been back a while ago. You know, first of all, studies of comparing districts and communities that where schools are opened and schools haven't been open show that schools don't play a major role in transmission of SARS-CoV-2. In addition, you mentioned another study that suggested perhaps 3 feet of distance might be enough. We do need to reopen schools. We need to do it safely with as much ventilation, as much testing and tracing as we can. We want to get our teachers vaccinated. So I think we can reopen schools safely, but there's a more important point, and I'm writing this as an article right now, it's going to be coming out soon, is that the problems with health, the economy, and a whole range of other things with closing schools has been disastrous for the United States. There are some lower income, often minority students, who've lost nearly a year of educational achievement.
And that I understand that there are 12 million children, as per a latest study, who still have no access to the internet 1 year into the pandemic.
Oh, I mean, it's a disgrace. I mean, there were some really interesting studies before the pandemic, because a lot of people think, you know, that poor kids, minority kids, can't achieve as well as richer kids. That's not true. In fact, during the school year, kids of all races and all socioeconomic classes do about the same. But kids who are poor and lack internet access don't get the same kinds of opportunities as the rich kids do. They fall behind during summer. And some of these kids have had a summer for a whole year. And this has affected their educational achievement. And it may be very difficult to close that achievement gap. And if we can't, and we must try extraordinarily hard, this could cost kids in terms of economic development and productivity and happiness throughout their lifetime, with a major health implications. So we've got to get our kids back to school. There's no two ways about it.
The vaccine manufacturer Moderna has just begun a vaccine trial for young children as young as 6 months of age. We've also heard that teenagers might be able to be cleared for being vaccinated by the summer or early fall. Let's talk about the vaccine rollout. I mean, it's actually quite remarkable that only 1 year after the pandemic was declared, we are already at, you know, there was something like 50 million people in the United States already vaccinated today. I think that number has jumped up to 60 or 70 million people, that we have multiple vaccines that are available that have been shown to be safe and effective. Just for a moment, I think it's quite important to celebrate that that is a remarkable achievement, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. You know, We do have so much to be thankful for. And, you know, sometime, you know, early on in this pandemic, I would just remind, and I think I did this with your listeners as well, just remind people about the sheer awesome power of this microscopic virus. But now it's so nice to be able to say that we have to sit back and look at the sheer awesomeness of human ingenuity and science to get a vaccine from the minds of scientists through clinical trials and then into people's arms in less than a year is just astounding. And these vaccines, they are really good vaccines. They're better than influenza vaccines in terms of their efficacy and their safety. And we've got three that are authorized for use in the United States, and there'll be more coming down the pike. This is a great achievement for science and for humankind.
I mean, there was a time last year, last spring and summer, where we were talking about we might have to wait 2 or 3 years. You know, don't expect 2021 to be any different from 2020. It's already proving that it will be different. But one of the big challenges is getting people to trust the vaccines. And it doesn't help that the AstraZeneca vaccine is now receiving some pushback. It should be noted, although the U.S., I understand, has a big stockpile, it hasn't been authorized for use in the U.S. yet, but it had been authorized in Europe. The U.K. is using it, but now Europe and many European nations have decided they are concerned about potential blood clots related to this vaccine. What do you know about this? Should we be concerned about this vaccine?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, the overall picture is, yes, it's a really good vaccine. And the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine is actually the vaccine that's going to vaccinate the world. It's been approved in many countries throughout the world. It's going to be the go-to vaccine because it's cheaper and it's more stable in lower-income countries. We're going to see it in Latin America, Africa. It's already being rolled out in Europe and high-income country. So it's a good vaccine. So what happened was, is that some Scandinavian countries noticed observed blood clots after the vaccine was given. And the European Medicines Agency and the World Health Organization are currently reviewing whether the vaccine is causally related to the blood clots. The chances are that it's not. In fact, it's highly improbable that the vaccine is causing the blood clots. And here's the reason. You know, whenever you deploy a vaccine, it's really tricky because you're using an intervention not just for, you know, thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands, but tens, if not hundreds, of millions of people. And when you do that, what you will see is that people have blood clots on a population basis all the time. They have heart disease, they have allergic reactions to various things, and they have autism, all kinds of things. Now, in some of those cases, there will be a proximity of time. You'll get the vaccine and then you'll get the adverse event, but that doesn't mean that they're connected in any causal way. And that's likely the case here. The European Medicines Agency don't think that there's a causal relationship, but countries in Europe have paused vaccinating using AstraZeneca until there's a thorough investigation. And that should happen very rapidly. And I'm highly confident that AstraZeneca vaccine will continue to be deployed. But I think it's prudent to pause, because what if the worst thing could happen, that it actually was causally related, even though we don't expect it to be? That would plummet vaccine trust. And so this shows that we're taking vaccines and science really seriously, and it should give people confidence that science is doing its work.
And I imagine that it wouldn't be determining the causal relationship or lack thereof shouldn't be too complicated. If you know the rate of these blood clots in the general population, the unvaccinated population, you know, the per capita rate of this, and then you simply compare the per capita rate in the vaccinated population. If there is no statistical difference between those two numbers, then the vaccine isn't causing anything. It's a coincidence, right?
Well, you're very well informed. The AstraZeneca, the company, have put out a statement saying exactly that saying that the observed blood clots in people who are vaccinated is actually considerably lower than the background rate of blood clots in the higher population. But, you know, we still want to be super careful, and we still want to make sure that there isn't any causal relationship. So, you know, I think it's prudent. Let's wait, you know, a few days, up to a week, for the European Medicines Agency and WHO to do a thorough investigation. When we get the all clear, it'll show that science has done its work, that regulatory agencies have done their work. We've cut no corners. It will boost trust in all vaccines. And then we'll get in the business of vaccinating the world, which is what we really need to do now.
I mean, unfortunately, even the slightest whiff of problem can, in the internet age, be interpreted as a you know, something to fear. And vaccine skepticism is a huge problem here in the United States. I understand the top two groups where there's skepticism. First group is white Republicans. Second group is African Americans. Although there's still plenty of African Americans who are choosing to get the vaccine. And then you have misinformation. Even around whether natural immunity versus vaccine-related immunity, you know, how those two compare. I want to quote Senator Ron Johnson, who's a Republican senator, who's unfortunately been, from the start of this pandemic, really spreading a lot of misinformation. He, you know, claimed that there was no virus, or just kind of dismissed concerns last year. Then he got the disease. And when asked if he was going to get vaccinated recently, he said, "I had COVID. I think that probably provides me the best immunity possible, actually having had the disease," which I think sort of echoes those demands for acquiring herd immunity, quote unquote, through allowing the disease to spread unchecked through the U.S., that somehow that immunity is stronger. How do you respond to that?
You know, there's a lot factually wrong with all of that. You know, very often When you get a disease, it is effective in terms of immunity, like measles. But you know, sometimes you get a disease and you're not immune. So, for example, you know, many people before the mumps vaccine got mumps, and then we now get shingles, and you can get shingles, and you then think, oh, well, that I'm immune from shingles. No. In fact, once you've had shingles, you actually are more at risk for a second bout, which is why you need the vaccine. And that's the same thing with COVID. It's not a complete parallel, but public health officials are telling us that even if you've had COVID and you have antibodies, that you still need the vaccine to really ramp up your immune system. And so it's a highly irresponsible thing to tell people, oh, well, you've had COVID, so you don't need the vaccine. That's just not true.
I understand that we already know that the antibodies that one can develop from actually having had the disease can wear off after a few months, hence all of the cases of reinfection that have been noted. And there was one doctor who spoke to the Washington Post, who said that that you can't just, you know, conclude that someone is bulletproof because they have one piece of armor, and said that essentially the vaccine immunity might be stronger than natural immunity in this case, in the case of COVID-19.
You know, it's actually the case of many diseases where the vaccine can confer protection against the disease much better than having the disease.
Wow.
And in this case, you're right. There is very good reason to believe that if you've had the disease, first of all, we don't know the extent to which you are immune, and I think there'll be individual variations. But secondly, even if you are, there's going to be a drop off in effectiveness. That is, your immune system is not going to be remembering as well.
Not to mention that your immune system itself can be impacted by having had the vaccine. There's several long-term health impacts that you can get. There are young, healthy people who got the disease who are still struggling with lingering effects. And if you have the choice of the vaccine, I imagine that the immunity from that is preferable to immunity from getting the actual disease.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the whole idea that, you know, began with Sweden and then swept in the pro-Trump world and things, that somehow you get to herd immunity by letting people get sick and many of them getting suffering and many of them dying, is just a horrible, I've never heard of it before. I've worked in public health for, you know, 30 years. You don't get to herd immunity by letting a large population get sick and many die. You do it through vaccines, and you've got the opportunity to do that now.
Let's talk about the way in which the vaccine rollout has taken place in the United States. I'd love to hear your opinion on it, because, of course, a lot of concerns around equity have driven the creation of these complex tiers, and it was critically and clearly important to get the nation's elderly vaccinated, because that was the vast number of deaths, the majority of deaths happened in that age group. Already we're seeing among nursing home residents and staff a massive drop off of infections and deaths as they've been vaccinated, which also, of course, proves that the vaccine works well. But then it's just been hard to, you know, in California, where we're based, there is a massive demand and people lining up, struggles over eligibility. I got deep into this because as a 46-year-old healthy woman, I was not eligible and joined a private Facebook group about where one can find leftover vaccines, and the desperation is palpable. And I waited 8 hours in line in the cold last week to get a leftover shot at a clinic. And it just feels like we could be doing better.
Yeah. Let's just begin before I provide some critical perspective about the vaccine rollout. We have to begin by saying that as a nation, overall, we've done superbly well.
Okay.
You know, remember, you know, for the first year of COVID, the United States was perhaps the worst performer in the world. And now we're one of the highest performers in the world. You know, next to the UK and Israel and a few other countries, we're right there at the top of the league table in terms of the percentage of our population that's been vaccinated. So let's give us a pat on the back first. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get better because President Biden has really taken vaccination rollout seriously. Having said all that, you know, this is American exceptionalism at its worst, which is basically a free-for-all and a competition. And whenever you have a free-for-all and a competition for a very valuable, scarce resource, the ones that are going to win that competition are the healthy, educated, high-income majority population. Grandma is going to find it really hard to surf the internet and find her vaccine slot. My mother, who's not 93, only just got the vaccine. Had a lot of difficulty getting it. And also people who are poor, minorities, inner city, rural, have had an enormous problem. Now, it's tempting to say that the CDC's priority tiers were at, you know, the ones at fault. But we've seen this kind of tiered approach so that states, counties, cities are just rolling it out in bewildering ways that only favor, you know, those who are well connected. And so ultimately, we've seen inequitable distribution and inefficient distribution. And that, you know, has got to end. This is the way it should happen. It's the way it happens with, you know, my wife's English. I lived in the UK for 15 years. All of our friends in the UK, you know, their doctors called them and said, okay, it's time for you to come in for your COVID vaccine.
Wow, how refreshing, because there's a national health service there, so everybody's on the same system.
And that's what happens in Israel and any place that has, you know, has a vaccine supply and a good health system. We have neither. We have a whammy that we have vaccines and we're getting them more quickly, but we don't have a health system and we don't have a health data system. So we have no national vaccine registry. State registries are all over the place. Medical records are all over the place. And so as a result, we don't know at this moment, you know, who's had a vaccine, how many doses, can we follow them up? Who can we reach who hasn't gotten a vaccine, who's eligible? We have no idea. So we've got to do a whole lot better in the future, even though we've done, you know, reasonably well compared to the rest of the world.
There was a story in the New York Times on Monday about a pharmacist in Brooklyn who basically saw that there were fewer and fewer people scheduling appointments, even though his pharmacy had received, you know, enough vaccines for elderly residents. So he took a pop-up clinic. He created a sort of pop-up clinic and took it to neighborhoods and had great success there. So there's individuals showing innovation to get these shots out to people. And it would be amazing if there was some more guidelines or oversight and leadership.
Doing that. Yeah. Basically, you don't want people chasing vaccines. You want the vaccines chasing the people.
Yeah.
And so you want, you know, your doctor to call you up, bring you to the office. You want mobile clinics going from community to community. You don't want to rely on the internet. You want to bring in church leaders, spiritual leaders, business leaders, community leaders, and really have a bottom-up grassroots campaign to get people vaccinated. That's what we did in lower-income countries, even for smallpox or polio. We know how to vaccinate hard-to-reach people. We're just not doing it.
And let's remind ourselves that smallpox and polio were eradicated because of vaccines here in the United States. We can live without fear of those diseases today because of mass vaccination efforts. Well, let me finally ask you, Professor Gostin, as Europe is currently struggling with a third COVID surge, as their vaccine efforts are much worse off than ours are, what can the U.S. do to avoid the surge? There's this race between getting the herd immunity through vaccinations versus those Republican-led states like Texas that want to open, that have opened up everything now. And it seems as though that reopening, if it were just postponed by a few months, would make all the difference in avoiding a third surge.
Yeah, no, I have some clarity about this. I mean, I think, you know, the good news is that by mid to late summer, the United States is going to be in a very good place. We'll still be living with COVID, but we're going to be in a much better place. And we're starting to look a little bit more normal than we have in the last year. But the next 2 months, I would say the next 8 weeks, are among our most perilous moments. Why? First, we have still a relatively low percentage of our population that's been immunized, number one. Number two, we have governors that are lifting orders for masking and opening businesses. Number three, there's huge pandemic fatigue in the population, so they're letting their guard down. We're back, we're at, you know, spring break and all those kinds of things. And then, you know, the final cherry on the top is that we've got widely circulating variants that are more transmissible, probably more pathogenic, that are probably be the dominant strain in the United States. And so the way we can avoid that next fourth wave is to mask up, avoid gatherings, stay outdoors. We all know what to do, and it's in our hands. And if we can just get through this next 8 weeks, we're going to see a much, much brighter future. Let's not let tens of thousands of people die unnecessarily at the last mile.
And we are seeing infection rates drop quite dramatically, which is very, very, positive. And there's also, I understand, just on the variants issue, finally, that the vaccines so far have been found to respond quite well to the variants, right? Not just through, invoking antibody responses, but also these things that are called T-cell responses in these new vaccines. The mRNA vaccines are quite promising in their ability to combat even the current variants that we have, although the future variants we don't know.
Well, you know, there's some evidence that the South African variant is partially resistant to the vaccine, so that you might get higher infection rates than you would without the variant. But the good news is that all the vaccines are approaching 100% effectiveness against hospitalizations and deaths, which is what we want to avoid. Yeah. So yes, you're right. All the vaccines are really, really good. And there's good reason to believe that the messenger RNA, the new technology vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, are particularly good. And we will be getting boosters. I think it's very likely that we're going to see people getting additional shots, perhaps even seasonal vaccinations, much the way we do with influenza.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Professor Gostin, for joining us today. I could have 100 more questions I could ask you, but I know your time is limited. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sonali. I love talking with you. And thanks for having me.
Stay safe out there. My guest has been Lawrence O. Gostin, University Professor at Georgetown University, where he directs the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law. He's also director of the World Health Organization Collaborating Center on National and Global Health Law, where he's served in numerous high-level capacities. He's been one of our go-to guests throughout the pandemic. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.